Welcome, 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 welcome to the 8th episode of Pints of Football. We are back after yet another international break. This time it was an international break only for us. And Himanshu, every time we go away, the world turns upside down. And in the space of the previous week, Arsenal have almost managed to bottle the league. Twice they have given up a 2-goal lead and landed themselves in a situation where they must beat Manchester City at the Etihad.
Such a North London thing to do.
Fortunes are not right for any of the three big clubs in London. On Wednesday night, Arsenal and Manchester City will face each other in a game that could potentially decide the Premier League title race. As things stands now, and around 70 points, accounting for all the games in hand, as things stand to end up becoming Premier League champions, while Manchester City can afford to draw this game and win the remainder of their games and still end up Premier League champions. We couldn't have asked in the Premier League title race.
I think this is one of those, there have not been a lot of title races as close as this, at least in the recent past. Yes, you're right, Ayusha. I mean, how Arsenal have ended up in this position remains to be seen. I remember in our previous episodes, I think both of us had predicted that Arsenal should do well enough to close the season in the next couple of games. But what happens is it's a draw against Liverpool, the draw against West Ham, and most recently the draw against Southampton. And all of these have been incredible matches to watch in a neutral's perspective, just to the sheer number of goals which has been involved, and also that the title race is now very open. But this is what Arsenal are facing right now. They have one match to win the season and also one match to lose it.
And I'm sure for all those Arsenal fans who are being nervous, I think we should keep some perspective though. At the start of the season, if you told Arsenal that come April or come almost the beginning of May, you will have one chance to beat Manchester City and possibly win the Premier League, they would take it, right?
Easily. I think Arsenal have done exceptionally well this season as per at least the way they finished last season. But having come so close, and I understand that they're really disappointed that it's now, it just seems to be hanging in the balance with just one match. It's great for Arsenal to have performed this well this season. But come to the end of it, if they don't have this title, United have the Mickey Mouse Cup or whatever else you choose to call it, along with the Champions League qualification, it somehow feels United have had a better season than Arsenal.
There's no way Manchester United have had a better season than Arsenal. One team is barely making it to the top four, while the other team is challenging for the title. Not at all. A trophy is not a trophy, Imamshu. Challenging Manchester City for the title is what truly counts. But yeah, my point is, yes, Arsenal have bottled up a massive lead that they had in the league, but still, I think this is a game every Arsenal fan and every Arsenal player should relish. This is a game they should approach without fear. And at the end of the day, even though they are leading the table because they have games in hand, they are still the Premier League leaders. And I think they should go into this game with that attitude. But all the emotions aside, Imamshu, going into this game, Arsenal also have some serious injury problems, right?
Yep, the major miss is of course Saliba, William Saliba, and that's been documented pretty well. But what really compounds this kind of an injury effect is they're missing Tomiyasu as well, which means that Ben White can't play centre half, which means they have to play Rob Holding. And Holding versus Haaland is a face-up I don't think any Arsenal fan wants to watch.
Yeah, I mean definitely, and there's also the pending issue of Xhaka being ill, right? I mean, yep. He will be back for this game, but how effective he is, what is his fitness?
He was a big miss in the last game as well. You just need that kind of a physical presence and obviously a very vocal person in the midfield. I don't think Fabio Vieira was up for it. Not the Vieira that I needed in that game. it obviously was a big miss. But it seems like he'll probably make it for this game. But 100% fit or not remains to be seen.
And broadly, if you look at it, Arsenal are missing probably two players. And then, yes, Xhaka will be back for this game. But that's where I think you see the difference between a City team and an Arsenal team, right? When you look at Arsenal, it seems like Arteta has constructed a very beautifully crafted puzzle where every piece is extremely crucial. While you look at Manchester City from the beginning of the season, there are players whom Pep Guardiola has let go from the team in the form of Ferran Torres, who left last year, then Cancelo unthinkably left in the middle of the season. He has had injuries. There was a point in the season he was not playing with Bernardo Silva. He was not playing with John Stones. But time and again, throughout the course of the season, the strength of City comes in the fact that they can let go of players and they can constantly keep dropping in and bringing in players. Nobody seems irreplaceable in this team. Even the games which Haaland has sat out, Julian Alvarez has come in and he's provided provided the goods. For example, in the game against Liverpool where Haaland was not fit, City didn't technically miss Haaland per se. And I think, so yeah, I mean, you see the difference between the two teams.
Yeah, I mean, they have so much strength and depth for Man City to kind of, you know, replace those players with other players or play in a different way so that they don't miss a player like Haaland. But yeah, it's not what it is with Arsenal. Arsenal are a team in development. Maybe they'll have a team like that maybe 2-3 seasons on. But right now, they have a first 11. They have a couple of players who they can replace in the first 11, and that's pretty much it. And we see the effects of a long season which is having on Arsenal.
I think you've summarized the Arsenal team beautifully, but I think that also shows the brilliant job that Mikel Arteta has done this season, like, wherein with this team of, let's say, 13 quality players, he's driving a City team right up to the wire.
But what really proves it, if he can do it for 2-3 seasons in a row, so just one season, let's see what happens.
Let's just focus on this season for Arsenal for now. But moving on from the injuries, let's focus on the areas where the game will be won and lost. Let's deep dive into how City will set up. If our listeners would remember, there was a point in the season where City was struggling defensively and Pep was constantly playing with three defenders only. But now he's almost willed this team, created this defense out of nothing, where four central defenders are playing across the pitch, wherein John Stones sometimes an inverted fullback, sometimes he's a holding midfielder, and he's made this work somehow. But the main decision for him is going up front, whether he plays Riyad Mahrez or whether he starts with Bernardo Silva. Because we have seen in the crucial games, in the games against Bayern, two games against Bayern Munich, where Riyad Mahrez did not even come off the bench, and Bernardo was his player of choice. But again, Mahrez scored the hat-trick against Sheffield United. So how do you think Pep is going to set up in this game?
I think for Pep, it really doesn't matter what someone's performed in the previous game, unlike what happens with like a Ten Hag, etc. Right? You just score a goal, you play for the next three games. With Pep, he really looks at the game individually. He doesn't really look at context behind them. So whether Mahrez plays or not is honestly up to what Pep thinks is suitable for that game. And he has played Mahrez in most of the Premier League games as against the games in Champions League. So I really see Mahrez starting here. I think Bernardo Silva might drop to the bench. And then Gundogan might go into as a midfielder to just, you know, sit next to Rodri. So this is how I see the team turning up. Be very surprising if he drops Mahrez for Bernardo Silva.
I actually think the other way around. I think he's going to start with Bernardo Silva to also provide extra cover on the flank where Xhaka plays. Because with Mahrez, there's always certain limitations on the way Mahrez can track back. So therefore, I feel, especially considering City only need to draw this game, it's not a must-win game for them. Even though Pep might approach it that way, I think he will start with Bernardo Silva in the field. I think that also provides a bit of extra mobility in the field because Mahrez is not so good with running between the lines and coming in necessarily. So that's where I personally think he would go for that extra bit of protection with Bernardo. And also because it's a big game, I think he's going to trust Bernardo more than he's going to probably trust Mahrez. Mahrez maybe can be someone who comes on from the bench. But moving on from this, there's another area where, as you highlighted earlier, right, this game can be decided is the Haaland versus holding debate. That is something which really makes me nervous for every Arsenal fan out there.
Right. I think Saliba, what he has done throughout the season, has been such a stable defender for Arsenal. He's also been one of those defenders who'll play from the back, which is really crucial for the way Arsenal have set up this season and where most successful teams have set up this season. Holding does not offer that, but holding is, I would say, maybe if you really look at positives for him, maybe he's good aerially, but then it's against Haaland. So Haaland is like leaps and bounds above anyone when it comes to aerial duels. So I just don't see, it's really a worrying factor for me. I don't see holding doing very well against Haaland.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that Arsenal have conceded the number of goals they've conceded in the past couple of games with holding at the bedrock of their defense.
Exactly.
And with Haaland also, you have such little margin for error. And especially holding does not have a pace to match with Haaland. So there are a lot of ways in which City can probably dissect this team. So if you are Arsenal, knowing the problem that you are facing with holding versus Haaland, there are a couple of things you can do, right? You can probably drop a couple of yards back and close that space between a De Bruyne and a Haaland. Basically, try to compress the entire game. Or you press up the entire midfield and try to cut out the supply from De Bruyne and a Gundogan or a Bernardo. What is the approach do you think Arteta should take for this game?
I think, as you said, in the former, what happens if you kind of compress the spaces is City have a lot of technical players and they're really good at playing through these limited spaces. So I don't think that will work out if Arsenal decide to do that. In the second case, I think the second case will be really required that Thomas Partey is on the top of his game. He has not been so in the last couple of games,
which exactly.
is another worrying sign for me. So both these tactics may not be very good for Arsenal. It remains to be seen, of course, if they can somehow execute this to perfection and everyone's like 10 on 10 on that day, might work out. I just don't see it happening as well.
I think Arsenal should go down the second route. They should go ahead and they should try to cut out the amount of time that Bernardo and KDB and Gundogan have on the ball. And I know that's easier said than done. But as you mentioned, if you drop back against it, they'll start dictating the pace of the game. And that's never a good space to be in, especially when you are in a must-win game. The second factor is pressing teams and winning the ball quickly has also been in line with what Arsenal have done for most of this season. And also, if we go back to the first game when City and Arsenal faced each other at the Emirates, and yes, City won 3-1. But for majority of this game, that game, Arsenal were dictating the pace of the game. They were winning the ball quickly and they were transitioning very quickly from their own half into the final third. And I think that is what they have to try to do even in this game. Because when City attack, that midfield becomes a very daunting place with five or sometimes six players stepping into a midfield role, with John Stones also coming in, can end up doing. And Imamsu, before we put a lid on this discussion, we've already discussed a couple of key players in key duels in Haaland versus Holding and Thomas Partey being extremely crucial. But apart from these areas, who do you think are the key players who must step up for either of these teams to be able to win the game? Let's start with City. Outside Haaland, who do you think has to have a really good game?
If Arsenal are really throwing the kitchen sink at this game, I would say the defense has to be on the game. Have to make sure that, you know, Saka and Martinelli are not running in behind their fullbacks. And in this case, the fullbacks are center halves for City. So if they can manage the pace of these two wingers on either side, that'll be really great for them. Obviously, Haaland and people up front will have to be on the top of their game as well. That's for City, I would say.
And what about Arsenal? Obviously, again, because we mentioned Haaland versus Holding. Holding has to have a good game. You have already mentioned Partey. He was partially at fault for the game, for one of the goals which Arsenal conceded against Southampton, where he was guilty of losing the ball close to his box. So obviously, Partey at the center of that midfield has to put in a performance of a player who knows what it is to win a league title. He was in that Atletico Madrid team which won the La Liga. But apart from Partey and apart from Holding, who has to have one of his best games of his career, who do you think needs to stand out?
I think the usuals, if they need to get a goal against the City defense, it'll have to be Odegaard, Saka, really getting the flow going, and then, you know, making sure Jesus is getting a service to kind of convert those goals. Or if it comes to a second half, which I predict it will happen, and maybe Trossard can get into the game as well. He brings in a little bit of surprise factor because he's not really set in completely in stone in terms of how Arsenal play. He has that surprise factor. He does a couple of things off their, flow, and it might surprise City. So I feel even Trossard coming in the second half might be a factor who might make a difference in this game.
I think I agree with you. I mean, it's very obvious who are the players, especially from the Arsenal perspective, who need to have a good game. Before I ask you about your predictions, I just want you to get a general sense to understand that, am I the only one who feels this way? So I really do feel, irrespective of what the actual result is, I do think Arsenal have a chance of pulling off a victory. And I think they really do have what it takes to beat the City team. And I know City have scored a plethora of goals in their nine match winning streak, but they still haven't truly been the City we saw last year, the City the previous year, where they have been dominating for 70-80 minutes, where they're creating chance after chance after chance. There are still gaps, and I think this Arsenal team on the given day is really, really capable of pulling out a result. So am I the only one, or do you also feel this way?
I don't think so. I mean, yeah, I understand where you're coming from by saying it's pretty much what Gary Neville said. You would probably not like me referring that. It's just one game to win the season and Arsenal have to give it everything. But for Man City, if you really think about it, they're focusing a little bit on Champions League as well. Not a little bit, not on that day for sure, but they do have a little bit of a distraction, which is the Champions League. Arsenal have nothing and this is all it. So if they're motivated enough to pull off something great, it'll be a game to watch.
So Arsenal can do it. Now the question is, will Arsenal do it? So what's your prediction?
I don't think so. I think it'll be a narrow win to Man City or a draw.
I also think, in spite of the fact that I really feel this Arsenal team is a capable team, I do feel that Manchester City have it in them, and especially if Arsenal concede the first goal, then I think it's a long, long night for them. And as easy as it is to say that Arsenal win this game and they'll end up with the title. Another reason they have to win this game is because they really don't have any easy fixtures also coming up. Just to cap off for everybody, the next three games, they're traveling to St. James's Park to play in Newcastle, which is probably the worst ground to play in this season. And after that, they are playing Brighton, who will definitely not make life easy for them. So there's really no margin for error. And again, if you are Arsenal, yes, you were in a great position. Yes, it's not a nice position to be in right now. But as we began this episode by saying, if at the beginning of the season we told you, you had six games to win the Premier League, you would definitely take it. So best of luck to Arsenal. And we really, really can't wait for the fallout of this game.
So we move on to what other things happened this weekend. It was a very eventful one, starting with Newcastle versus Tottenham. I remember checking this game and I remember messaging you at the same time. I thought Tottenham had a player sent off because it was 5-0 up in 20 minutes. Even the Newcastle players couldn't believe it for themselves. There's a very meme-like picture of Isaac's face going around where he's like has a very confused expression. He's like, what the hell has happened? And it was really very stupid of what like Tottenham did in that game. And Stellini has been sacked as a result of that game, and rightfully so. We expected a lot of things. I expected a lot of things from Stellini because I thought it's Conte's tactics without the pressure of maybe executing it. And I thought Tottenham might do well. Totally have to backtrack on that. This was a terrible game. They played Perisic and Pedro Porro, who have been wingers, converted to wingbacks, and now expected to play in full back positions. And they were nowhere to be seen. It just seemed like Tottenham played with two centre-halves and only two defenders at the back. And Newcastle totally overran, especially in St. James's Park, under the raucous atmosphere that was set up by the Toon Army.
This was a new low even for Tottenham. And after this, I mean, Stellini getting sacked. At this point, I think the only competition or the only role Tottenham are playing in the Premier League is making Chelsea fans feel that they are not alone in being the worst run club in London.
But Chelsea have Crystal Palace in 11th and 12th to deal with.
But I think with this game, we can safely say that Tottenham's top four, the race for top four, their ambitions are done, right?
Mathematically, still possible, but you're right. It's at a downturn. I don't know what Mason will get out of them in the next couple of games to do something about it.
And I think with every big defeat that Tottenham are having right now, the question over Harry Kane staying or not keeps looming larger and larger. And I'm bringing this question up because there's this constant debate, right? Should Kane stay at Tottenham, be a one-club man, get that statue outside White Hart Lane, and anyway end up breaking Alan Shearer's record? Or should he now try to step out and try to get that elusive trophy? And again, I'm not going to say, oh, if he wins the Carling Cup or the FA Cup, he fulfills his legacy. Like, truly go to a club where he has a chance of winning the Premier League or the Champions League. What do you think should be the road that Harry Kane takes?
He seems to be a very ambitious guy. So for him, he really needs to get out of Tottenham. And now they don't have a manager. They don't have too much of a reason to, you know, get him to stay. The times when under Conte, when they were doing well, that he thought he could stay and achieve something with Conte, did not happen. I don't see it heading any other way unless they get Nagelsmann and convince him that, you know, hey, this guy can do something with Tottenham. Very unlikely. I think for both parties, it's just good to say goodbye. £100 million is out of the club for a better future.
I mean, even I agree with you. Considering Kane's quality and given his age at 30, I don't think even if a Nagelsmann comes, he should not stay around for another rebuilding project. At 30, this probably might be the last chance for him to get a high-profile transfer. And I think he should join a club where he genuinely feels there's a legitimate chance of him landing a trophy in the next 2 to 3 years. And considering that City have Haaland, I really don't know where he goes.
There's another club in London who probably needs a number 9.
But I don't think that club can guarantee him any trophies over the next 2 to 3 years.
Right. Then we move on to the FA Cup draw. Man City, Sheffield United, they beat them 3-0. Proper professional execution of a team, I would say. Don't need to talk about that. But moving on to the other side of Manchester, Brighton versus United. This was so taxing on a Man United fan like me. It was so difficult to watch. Like, Brighton had so much of possession. In terms of chances, I would argue we both had like good number of good, you know, quality chances, I would say, but neither of us could convert. They had a rejected United number 9 and Welbeck trying to do something on one end. We had Martial, who will be soon to be rejected, I hope, as a United striker and bring someone else on. So it was a very lengthy game, but somehow we made it through. A very interesting point for me to make here is how tired United looked. It was a 52nd or 53rd game for us this season, as against Brighton, who were playing the 37th. But of course, we have spent like hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds more than them. So that's not much of an argument to be made. Tiring game, somehow made it through. I still fear a lot for what we'll be facing up in the finals. But so far, so good.
Let's not just recap United's week with the FA Cup. Do not sweet talk through it. Let's go back to the game you had against Sevilla and the self-destruction of Manchester United over the two legs, primarily sponsored by Harry Maguire. I just could not believe that in the first leg you threw away a 2-0 lead through two own goals. That is Tottenham level category of bottling games. But in the second leg, losing that way, I think that was absolutely shambolic. And no matter what Sevilla have done in the Europa League, as a United fan, that performance was truly unacceptable, right?
Yeah, it is. They say Sevilla to Europa League, Real Madrid to, you know, Champions League. But yeah, you're right. Sevilla has been doing so poorly this season in the league. So they just somehow, the way they played at Seville was like, it was amazing. The atmosphere was created and United had no answer to it. They really should start showing. They should have a lot more Casemiros in this game. A lot more people who have the balls to do something in this kind of an atmosphere. Sadly, we did not have it. Sadly, we did not have Lisandro Martinez and Varane at the back. And we had Maguire, and I don't want to talk about that event, but that happened. So it is what it is. We move on.
No, we don't move on, because now that you have brought up Lisandro Martinez, there are a couple of things we need to talk about for Manchester United. The injury list is now slightly growing. Varane's fitness has always been patchy. Now Lisandro Martinez is probably out for the rest of the season. And even Bruno Fernandes is probably going to miss quite a few games now between now and the end of the season. And I know United are in a good place for the top four, but it's still not sealed. Liverpool now again have seemed to have picked up some momentum. This can get tricky, right? If United bottle one or two games.
Very. I mean, I've always said this in all our previous podcasts, like not just the injuries, just feel like the team's getting a lot more tired after that one cup that we won. It just seems like we've lost a lot of momentum. And I've seen that downward trend in terms of their performance. So yeah, it's a big worry. I am very scared of what will happen at the end of the season.
But the good thing is United are still managing to get those results. And Ten Hag, whatever happens, win, lose or draw, he always seems to respond to whatever the weaknesses are in the next game. So I think those are two positive signs going forward.
Yeah, now I have to request permission to move on. I'm sick of talking about United. We move on to Chelsea. And not the game that Chelsea played, because they didn't play anything this weekend.
Good that was him. A big, big relief. I was
he
just
had
so
a very
happy.
Good weekend, the Savisha.
I was more happy to not see Lampard's face than honestly not see us lose.
But there's some news. A little birdie tells me that Pochettino might be in at Tottenham.
I mean, if you go back to our third episode, I would say, second episode when we dissected Chelsea, and I told you that Pochettino was the man for the job. So firstly, we were right that it was the wrong time to sack Potter, even though Potter should have been eventually removed from the job. We were absolutely right about Chelsea getting Pochettino, and that seems to be the case. And I think he's the right man for the job. I know Luis Enrique was rejected and Nagelsmann apparently said no. But again, I keep saying Poch is the right man for the job. Quickly recapping, Nagelsmann was always the risky choice. He's 35. I think a manager that young at a big club can always turn out to be a dicey appointment. Luis Enrique, eccentric person, would have probably made a couple of demands as preconditions to be taking up the job. What Chelsea need again is a manager who knows the Premier League, who can come in, who can trim down the squad, and who can also grow the plethora of players we've bought in the January transfer window. I really think he's at least the right manager for the next 2 to 3 years, because especially considering the fact that Chelsea are also in a probable mess with the financial fair play. So again, I think he's the right man for the job. He's the right man to take the club at least through this phase. And honestly, I can't wait for this season to end. Not because, again, I can't see Chelsea lose. As long as we play well and we lose, it's fine. But I seriously can't see another display of Frank Lampard's tactics. For the love of football management, Lampard should just not take another job, period.
Talking about getting rid of Lampard, let's speak about Tuchel. He is now playing in the Bundesliga. He's playing with Bayern, and Bayern have ended up in the same position that they sacked Nagelsmann in. They lost to Mainz, and Mainz is incidentally the place where Tuchel started his career from. So it's pretty much like the way, you know, Moyes lost to Everton when he was United's manager. It just seems to be like Bayern is back at, you know, a square one. But of course, the management, the hierarchy have come out and said good things about him in support of Tuchel, and that it's a long-term project, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's...
I mean, they had to back Tuchel after the way they sacked Nagelsmann. Again, another club which sacked their manager at the wrong time. We've stated it in our previous episodes. And if you remember, when Tuchel was appointed, I told you that it's not... He's not a straightforward fit with what Bayern Munich want. He's not going to be the person who's going to come there and who's going to start delivering attacking football, flashy football. He's simply not that person. So again, it's not like a new season comes and the Bayern Munich board will get exactly what they want. Tuchel definitely might deliver results. That's always there. But it's not written in stone that a new season will bring proper harmony between the Bayern board and the Bayern manager, which is often more important than how Bayern Munich actually play on the pitch.
Talking about securing the league, so Dortmund, by the way, won convincingly, so they're now on top. So we'll see what happens in German Bundesliga. Let's move to another country, Italy, where Napoli seems to be very close to a title right now. What they need is a win and for Lazio to lose, and they pretty much wrap it up next week itself. Napoli have had an amazing season with two standout players in Osimhen and Kvaratskhelia. Few shout-outs to their defender as well, Kim. And of course, there's one player who Kane will probably be having in his nightmares right now, and Ndombele, who left Tottenham, is now winning the Serie A.
Yeah.
There's so many examples of people leaving Tottenham and winning a league or a title as soon as they do so. So that's another example for Kane to probably consider to make his decision.
And not only just Napoli, I think it's been a bright year for the Serie A as a whole. Simply because of the way Napoli have played, the way they have put certain players on the stage like Osimhen and Kvaratskhelia, who in a lot of circles are now being called Quaradona. But even apart from Napoli, I think at the European stage, it seems like this has been the year Serie A has finally rose to prominence again. We mentioned in our one of our previous episodes when we broke down the Champions League quarterfinal that at the beginning of the year, nobody would have predicted that three Serie A teams will be there in the quarterfinals. And then the fact that we would have at least one of them in the Champions League final. And boy, what a game do we have to get there. It is the Milan derby. It's really going to be an absolutely slobber knocker of a game. And Himanshu, I don't think anybody would have predicted that AC Milan would knock out Napoli of the Champions League quarterfinals.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Osimhen was like not available for the first leg, and hence they're losing. But yeah, it was an amazing game of football. Also, as you said, amazing time for Serie A because of the amount they had to, like, they had very little expenditure as compared to, I think, the entire league had lesser expenditure than Bournemouth as a team put together. So that was how bad it was for Serie A, but they've obviously shown how good they are.
And I mean, simply in terms of finances, right? Apparently, the Serie A's three-year TV rights deal are close to some 750 million euros, while the Premier League's four-year TV deal is close to 6 billion euros. So you just see the gap that exists between the Serie A and the Premier League. And for them to do so well in the Champions League and set up this massive game, I think, is absolutely phenomenal. And again, that game between AC Milan, Inter Milan, the Milan derby, it's two European giants coming back to the big stage. It's going to be an absolutely brilliant game. Not that City and Madrid will not be, but this is truly a truly romantic story. You know what that sound is? It's time for our Bobo moment of the week.
It was a very difficult decision this time around because we had an incident where Weghorst did something. I wanted to put that up because he is the OG Bobo. But we actually ended up choosing Zinchenko. So after the second goal was conceded by Arsenal, Southampton scoring the second goal, I think Theo Walcott scored that one. He called all the Arsenal players into a huddle and was giving them a speech, etc. It really didn't seem like the Arsenal players were listening to him. And what happened for the third goal is Zinchenko himself lost his focus. He let the Southampton defender, whose name is a very tricky one that I failed to recall, run free and score that goal. So there you have it, Bobo moment of the week. First time going to an Arsenal player, Zinchenko. Of course, he can prove us wrong totally and be brilliant at the match at City and score a couple of goals, assist, etc.
I mean, it's only fair. Arsenal have been the Bobo team of the week, and it only makes sense that
the Bobo moment is an Arsenal player. For sure.
So that's it. That's our 8th episode in the bag. And as we close out this episode, we are only looking forward to one thing. Manchester City versus Arsenal. And I really, really hope the team that wins this game does end up winning the league. We'll come back in the next episode with the fallout from this game and everything else that happens in the crazy game of football. Till then, thank you for listening to us. Please continue to like, share and subscribe to our podcast. Keep spreading the word about Pints of Football. Keep sharing it with other ardent followers. You spreading the word is the only way we can grow.
Also, we have an Instagram page right now with almost zero posts. We have 15 followers. So guess where that'll get us. When you look at the Instagram page, I'm sure we'll have a lot more posts up. So do support our Instagram page as well. And let us know in the comments if you want anything different in the show.
Thank you and see you next time.